Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. You would have seen there's a lot of alerts over the last 24 hours by the Gardaí, by newspapers, indeed by the Irish Army, appealing for information on a potential live ordnance round, which was discovered by a member of the public in County Wicklow in the Glen of Amal. I think people know it well, West Wicklow, around Lugan na Cuile, which is a live firing range for the Army and has been the site of a number of tragedies, unfortunately. But the round was discovered by a member of the public and then went missing for some reason. And the Gardaí and the Army are asking the person who found it, because it could still be very dangerous, to hand it in or bring it to a, or indeed ring the Army and tell them where it is. Don't touch it. Don't touch it. Don't touch it. Now, unfortunately for Philip Bogle. Philip, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you,
Philip,
doing?
This, you contacted us because this raised gave you raised a memory of an event that you and so many people remember in the Glen of Amal, the same location in 1979. In fact, in April 1979. What did it bring back? Tell us about it, Philip.
Well, I actually read that article about the ordnance that somebody discovered, and it was actually just the Glen of Amal. Whenever you say the Glen of Amal, I mean, there'll be a lot of people from, say, Sarsfield Park and Old Lucan in particular.
Yeah.
Before I say that, Joe, I'd have to say that for the people of Old Lucan, what I'm going to say and what happened is deeply personal to the people of Old Lucan. And I'd be very conscious and mindful of the mums and dads, brothers and sisters, of the victims, and in particular of the young boys that died at that time. And what I say, I only say this to people in general, not to forget, be careful, don't go there. And in particular, anybody that did walk away with that, don't. There was a youth club in Lucan in 1979, and they organised a weekend away in the Glen of Amal. And it was actually my first night there, me and my older brother Martin. We went to the youth club, it was in the Hollow. It was up at the pub at that time, it was Bob Carroll's. Was up and it was in an old cottage in the Hollow of Lucan. We went to it anyway, and it was my first night there. Me and Martin, we paid a pound each deposit to go to the Glen of Amal and for a weekend away. And anyway, what happened was the lads went to the Glen of Amal. They went talking 11, 12, and 13 year olds went to the Glen of Amal. They happened to stray onto some place for whatever reason. They found an unexploded ordnance and they were basically kids, and they were throwing it around and messing with it, and it went off anyway. But this is the danger of them. It killed three of them and it injured 10 others. I'm fairly serious too now. But I wasn't there. What happened was there was three lads killed in the Glen of Amal, but what happened there from my end was we had paid the deposit to go, me and Martin. The first night I was in that youth club, we were coming home, and there was four brothers, Paul Point and David Point. Now, we were reared with Paul Point, David Point, me and my older brother Martin. Martin was first good pals with Paul, and David, me and David ran ahead of Martin and Paul, just young lads, mess. And we ran down to the lights in Lucan at Bob Carroll's, and when I got to the lights, David was ahead of me. David was about halfway across the road, and I ran to catch up with him, and we were running, and next thing, it was a big skid, and I said, Jesus, David, that was a close one. And what happened was David got a belt of a car, and I didn't know it at that time. What happened was David got a belt of a car, the two lads came, Matt and Paul, and they started running, so I ran with them. We ran home and got the two mothers, but they came back down. The mothers were crying and came back down, and I didn't even know where David was, but there was a small bundle on the far side of the road just lying at the curb, and it was David. And anyway, the ambulance came and the guards came and put David in the back of the ambulance. And I remember his mum, just things you remember, I remember his mum was cradling his shoe and they cut him off. But David had got flung through the air and he had a head injury. Yeah. And he was in a coma for 3 weeks. And one towards the morning, we'd got a phone in the house, and our neighbours, Egan's, Mrs. Egan, a lovely, lovely woman, and Peter Egan, Mrs. Egan came in one morning, one towards the morning, and she said to my mother that they were after turning off David's life support machine in the morning, and that David had died. And
that was a tragedy in the area. But
3 weeks before it. Yeah, 6 weeks. David got knocked down 6 weeks before the Glen of the Mall.
And then just to say to people, we were all in youth clubs when we were growing up. I was in St Mary's Youth Club, but it was in Ballyferm. Your one was in Lucan. And it wasn't scouts, but we did go on weekends away to Anoka youth hostels. We did go an awful lot to Wicklow, Ballinclay, Dunard or whatever. And it was a fantastic weekend for especially us from the centre of Dublin, and Lucan and Ballyferm, but not too far from the centre of Dublin. No. And the tragedy was the group, and there's a whole issue about warnings and absence of, but they wandered as they were hiking onto this site. They, as children do, young people do, they saw something and they got close with it. And Derek Finn, who was 13, Declan Kane, who was 13, and Victor Mills were all killed. And all three of them, as you say, that's where you began, from Sarsfield. And the anniversary is on April 14th. I know Victor died later after arriving at the hospital. Now, when you saw this, and by the way, there was a big search, obviously, after this horrific, horrific event. 10 children were injured, 8 boys, 2 girls, 5 critically limbs damaged, shattered bones, burns, shrapnel injuries. And that's without even beginning to talk about the psychological trauma that must have stayed with so many. But after this tragedy, the army carried out an extensive search of the area and found 54 live shells. There were 15 anti-tank shells, 27 artillery shells, 12 cavalry shells. And a further 36 objects were found in the Dublin area and elsewhere that had been removed from the range. And of these, 7 were live shells, which comes back to where today's programme began. That is the army saying if somebody found a live shell in that area, they either dumped it somewhere or they inadvertently took it home. The army need to find that, and they need to find it quickly. And they're saying to people, do not, if you have it in a shed or whatever, do not under any circumstances touch it. Ring the Gardaí, who will get the army bomb disposal out immediately. Now, there's been incredible work done on, I know we covered it a number of years ago, but there's been investigation work done in the journal by Cormac Fitzgerald, and he's actually got access, and he waited for the papers to be released, and the journal came up with the following devastating findings, so to speak, on the basis of the papers being released. There was a similar explosion 7 months earlier, September 78. 3 boys were injured. The army said it would erect additional warning signs. However, these were not erected by the date of this tragedy, April 79. In a now declassified report, an investigating coroner said the group may have encountered up to 4 warning notices, but they need not have passed any of them. A local curate, Father Kevin Lyon, publicly warned that the Glen was not safe. It's done, and I see the ads in the paper over the last few days, especially given the holidays and holiday weekends coming up. In response, the army made inquiries about about Kevin Lyons, rather than take action about what Father Kevin said. A report into the blast identified issues in relation to the number and effectiveness of warning notices in the Glen and the lack of permanent camp staff. And the way in which the unexploded ordnance, as you know, subsequently searched for. And as I say, searches of the area carried out immediately after found 54 live shells. A separate committee set up to examine the safety of the Glen. Remember, this is a massive part of West Wicklow. The safety of Glen of Amal following the explosion said the warning notices were not satisfactory, that the wording was too legalistic, and that old vehicles, which is what these three young people approach, and who doesn't, especially of a certain age group, love when you see an old tanker, an old truck climbing up Ormond. The old vehicles used as targets in Glen were practically an irresistible attraction, and the devastating, apart from the unspeakable horror of what those families have gone through, the government have never offered an official apology to the victims of the blast, of the families. Is Ron O'Neill there? Ron, I know you're on a WhatsApp line, which is great. Ron, good afternoon. Hello, Ron.
Hey, Joe. How are you doing?
Good. Hopefully the line is okay. Ron, I know the anniversary has just passed again. You are a survivor of the Glen of Amal explosion on April 14, 1479. Were you aware of this?
Indeed.
Yeah, and you're still upset, obviously. Were you aware of this army campaign over the last few days looking for another explosive device which was found down there?
I actually read the article. I read the article last night in the paper. All right, yeah, I did.
And not that you need remembering, I suspect, Ron, but what did it bring? What did it bring back for you?
There isn't a day goes by that you don't think about it, but just the fact that, you know, you still have hiking areas there, two hiking areas, and you can come off a path and pick up a live ordnance. It shouldn't be able to happen.
You still think...
79... Yeah?
No, sorry, I won't interrupt you because the line is a bit iffy. Keep going, Ron, if you can.
You were saying there about the signage that back in 79, there was only one sign, and you could barely read that. If red flag is flying on top of a hill, do not enter. So there's no red flag. You're in an area that's just looks like any other landscape. It doesn't look like any different, and you walk straight in.
And then were you in the main group? Did you see the lads heading for?
The group sort of split after we were at the Churchill tank. The group split up into two. One group went ahead. We were the second group.
Okay.
The second group was the main group that sustained all the injuries on where the three lads were killed.
Yeah. And when did you realize
The shell was found between the Churchill tank and before we had to cross a river. So the shell was found somewhere in between then.
Yeah.
And it was carried from there probably about 500 yards after we crossed the river. And it was being thrown around, and it's as far as I've learned.
Okay, well, I'll take a break and see if we can get a better line. Joe at rt.ie.
Five. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
A little glimmer of hope. The army have just been on to say that ordnance that they've been looking for has been found. So that's a relief for so many. Ron, so the Churchill tank was there. It's a massive tank. It was used. It's a disused tank, obviously. It was used for target practice, so there would be rounds around the tank, obviously.
The position that it was in at when we were at it wasn't being used as a target.
Okay.
Yeah. And when it was in a wooded area that looked like a picnic area.
Okay.
And so it wasn't being used. So when you walked from the Churchill tank heading towards Loch Nakuilla, there's two sort of stream rivers that you have to cross. We came across one of them, and we crossed over from there. But it was found between the Churchill tank and the river.
And I remind people, it was Easter again. It was a time for new clubs to go. And when did you realise something catastrophic had happened, Ron?
I realised when everybody was lying on the ground and I tried to get up. And
did you hear? Do you remember the explosion, or do you remember the?
I remember everything. I didn't lose consciousness until I reached Temple Street Hospital 6 hours later. Remember the flash. Remember the bang. Tried to get up off the ground, and I could see both my legs were severely badly damaged. My right leg was basically almost gone.
And did you obviously your own catastrophe there, but did you realise that the impact had killed?
At that stage, no, I didn't, no. Victor passed away in hospital beside me in the first hospital that we were brought to.
Yeah.
You know, which was, you know, he was a good friend.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And did the explosion, for example, obviously it was a catastrophic explosion. Did it lift people into the air? Did it lift you into the air?
It did lift me into the air, yeah. It pushed everybody back quite a ways from where it was.
Yeah.
I was probably about 10 metres from where it actually exploded. And it blew me back by about a good 5 metres.
And then as the time unfolded, the emergency services?
That was quite difficult because of where we were. Three were airlifted. I was supposed to be airlifted, but they didn't have enough fuel. Come back.
Mm-hmm.
So we were brought across land on tractor and trailer to the river, transferred to another tractor and trailer to be brought out to the road into the ambulances. So I'd say all in all, it was probably about two and a half hours before we actually were taken away from there.
Wow.
And part of the Glen of Amal, as far as I remember, rescue team had been training that day, heard the explosion, and they were sort of the first responders.
Okay.
And did what they could do for us. Yeah.
And when you say, Ron, you were conscious until you got to Temple Street 6 or 8 hours later. When you were being carried or being transported on the back of the tractor and the trailer, surely you must have been in pain.
I had no pain.
You had no pain?
None. They didn't even have to give me pain medication in the ambulance.
And
I suppose that's adrenaline or...
Yeah, yeah. Blood loss.
I didn't have any pain.
Surely there were...
I had extensive blood loss. I had to have two transfusions. The lower right leg, when the ambulance crew did get out to us on the field, they wanted to amputate my right leg.
Yeah.
That's how bad it was. It was blown right through. Yeah, this is hard for a lot of people to hear, especially on the radio, but
yeah.
That's the extent of it.
Yeah, and
it wasn't our fault. Any other country in the world, an artillery, live artillery range would be sealed off.
Yeah.
This just looks like anywhere else in the country.
Yeah. And Wicklow, and that part of the Dublin Mountains down into Wicklow, is one of the, if not the most popular hiking site, especially among youth clubs and scouting groups in the country. Always has been, and as well known. You say you were in the bed beside Victor, who unfortunately died. When did you hear that the two other boys had passed?
It would have been a couple of weeks later after I came out of intensive care in Temple Street. I was sort of in a semi-induced coma.
And at that stage, the boys had already been
buried.
Mm-hmm. And the which must apply to a lot of people, Ron, the effects, the post-traumatic, the post-physical injury effects, as well as the psychological, what have they been?
It never leaves you. It's constantly there. The slightest loud bang or something will give you a flashback. It just never leaves you. I've had multiple knee replacements, multiple hip replacements, and that's all down to the injuries sustained back then.
And the physical after effects so many years later?
In the short term, it was difficult. It probably took me 2 years to get back properly walking and running, and as I got a little bit older, it got a little bit easier physically.
Okay.
But into old age, it's getting harder.
Is it, yeah. And did you have did you have to have many surgical procedures or indeed hospital interventions?
I had a lot of surgery. I've been going to the hospital since 1979, since the accident. I have multiple skin grafts on both legs that have to be looked after. And as I said, I've had both knees done twice and both hips done twice. Yeah. And that was the onset of osteoarthritis because of the traumatic accident.
And Ron, you say that the initial response, which I can understand on the scene, given the catastrophe and your catastrophic injuries and the injuries to the other boys, including that Victor and Derek and David, were actually killed. But
Declan,
who decided, you said you were going to amputate my leg. That didn't happen, obviously.
No, it didn't. I wasn't even 12. I was only allowed to go on that trip because my birthday was that week.
Okay.
And I was turning 12. You had to be 12 to go.
I remember that. I remember that rule in the youth clubs.
Yeah, and there was two ambulance men, and the one man said that there's no way that we can save that leg, and I had a few choice words as a young boy to say to him about taking my leg off. And what they did was they put me in a vacuum splint, and that's actually what saved the leg and saved a lot of blood loss.
Okay.
So luckily.
And Ron, in a sense, the parents finding out about, there's a different world in 79 in terms of communications. But the parents finding out about this tragedy.
Well, my mum and dad were told that I had passed. Oh, I had died in the accident. And it wasn't until I had reached Temple Street that word came back that I was actually alive and I was in Temple Street.
And your parents subsequently told you, Ron, we were told you had died.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, it was Lucan, like Ballyfermot, was a small community back then. And it affected everybody really badly. And I would say everyone that lived in Lucan at that time have some sort of post-traumatic stress because of that event.
And the fact is, Carl McFitzgerald discovered in his, when the archive was eventually, the classified papers were released. Well, among other things, we knew that the army had never apologised, or the state had never apologised.
Only for Cormac, as he said, coming across it and all of the hard work that he's done and put into it, you know, it would have stayed under the carpet.
And he's put so much into so many new revelations in the journal that
there's a lot of stuff I didn't know that I found out because of Cormac. Besides the government, we never got an apology either from the defence forces.
And we covered, as you probably know, I know that the other revelation that people had known about the three boys injured about 9 months beforehand, but that the army had undertaken to put up more warning signs, and they didn't till the three boys were killed in 7-8 months later. But we also covered another explosion in the Glen of Amal in 1941 when that's 16 correct, yeah. soldiers, and we were, I think it's about 4 years ago, were contacted by a number of survivors and indeed relatives saying, We need a proper annual memorial. These people have to be remembered. But I also remember then, Ron, believe it or not, now I know it was 1941, different time, we had a man on, a soldier, who was declared dead. The army came to his, he lived in Sean McDermott Street, the army came to his home. Now I know this confusion happens. Yeah. The army came to his home to tell his parents that he was he'd been killed in the explosion. And he was sitting there with his parents, believe it or not. So, a statement.
Doesn't surprise me.
a statement from the Defence Forces. The Defence Force ensures the safety of members of the public in the vicinity through a number of, as vicinity of Glen of Amal military range, through a number of means. Substantial signposting along the boundary of the range area and walking routes prohibiting entry to the range area, as well as warning against touching any military debris as they may explode. Secondly, twice a year, EOD teams, explosive ordnance teams and engineer specialist search teams clear the range area of unexploded ordnance. In addition to this routine clearance, any blinds that occur during live firing are reported by the conducting officers to the area staff, which are then disposed of. A blind isn't that the technical term for ammunition which has been fired and has failed to explode, which is what happened in the case of the case of the three boys, Victor, Derek and Texan.
Ours was a mortar shell.
But you say, but your point is, more than four decades later, signage isn't enough.
No, it's not. And our 2 years to go and clear ordnance isn't enough when you have people that are still hiking in that area.
It will
you
be.
You know, somebody could pick something up and just say, oh, here, I'm not bringing that, I'm not taking that with me and throw it. Yeah. I would hope that wouldn't happen, but it did happen in 79.
Okay, say with us, Ron. It's Ron O'Neill and Philip Bogle.
Sure.
Ron is a survivor of that tragedy. It happened at this time of year, Easter, in 1979. Fairly close to the capital, fairly close to where the boys were from, Derek, Declan and Victor from Lucan in Dublin. They were with their youth club. Excitement, I can hear the excitement. I went through it myself. You're getting ready, you're being bussed down. The whole thing of camping and tins of beans and sausages and whatever else you were. The excitement then on the Saturday morning going on your hike, and then tragedy strikes. Joe at rte.ie 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I just remind people, there's the lads from Luke and the youth club, the group 26 young children, 12 years of age and up, and the six leaders, so there's plenty of leaders. When they saw this, the Churchill tank, I think they still have them in the Curragh, in the museum in the Curragh, the name suggests the name suggests how big the actual thing was, and how if you saw an old tank, you can imagine the excitement that you'd run towards it. Gary Martin. Gary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How
good
are you?
Good afternoon, Philip. Good afternoon, Ron. Hope you are well, buddies.
And you,
Gary. How you are?
And you know,
I've seen you, Gary, in more than 20 years.
I've been hiding from you.
Gary,
I'm keeping well, anyway.
To hear the two lads, but Gary, you don't need anything to prompt the memory. You were there that day. You were 12 years of age. You're from Sarsfield Park in Lucan. Where Derek, Declan and Victor were also there. Do you remember seeing that massive Churchill tank sitting in the field and the excitement?
Actually, Joe, it was like if you were 14 and seeing a naked lady, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was just attractive.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a, I don't know, it was like an attraction in a, I don't know.
And you climb, I presume the lads climbed up on it and had a look at it, because it was in ruins anyway.
Including myself, I think, I'm not sure now, I mean, time fades, memories, and you get mixed up, but I think I was actually up on the tank when Ram was there, I think.
Yeah, I think. And then you got off the tank, and then this round was picked up, obviously, not knowing what it was. And it was carried for a while, wasn't it, by the lads?
I had it in my hands myself, Joe.
And how big was it? What was it?
When it was found.
Yeah.
And the chap that found it.
Yeah.
I don't know. The lads will remember him as well. Like, Victor was just loved the army and wanted... That's all he wanted, and he loved his action man and that. But he wanted this. I don't know. We thought somebody said a starting motor or something like that.
Yeah, okay.
Off the tank, something.
Yeah.
So he was keeping that as a
souvenir. You know, yeah, whatever.
A mental,
Of course. And how soon after it was picked up and the lads had it, how soon after did the tragedy occur, insofar as you can remember, Gary, because I know time was...
Yeah, well, Ron is after helping me there with a couple of, well, listen to him or remember it a little bit more. As far as I remember, when we crossed the stream, there was a bit of a hill with a wall on top of it.
Okay.
That's correct,
that
yeah.
we had to climb. Yeah. And we sat there for a while
yeah. and dried off.
It took us half an hour to go across the stream. But we sat in that wall, and then, as Ron said, the other, all the lads went up ahead, you know, to get up to the Lug na Cabhilla. And at that wall, when it was time to move on, I got up, Derek was sitting beside me, and I got over the wall, Derek got over the wall, and one of the youth leaders grabbed me and he says, "Here, help Mary over the wall."
Yeah.
So I turned to help Mary over the wall, and that's when the explosion happened, you know.
So you were quite close to it.
Yeah, yeah. I actually got a piece of shrapnel, Joe. It's weird. The lads wouldn't know this. But, a bit of shrapnel ran up the outside of me shoe.
Yeah.
Burnt me sock and reddened my skin, kind of, but never touched me skin.
And when did you realise that this was an explosion, Gary, or did you know what it was?
Well, straight away.
Okay.
Straight away. I mean, you know, we're all watching RTE and the troubles were on. You know, we knew what an explosion was.
Good point, but, yeah.
You know, back then.
79, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I knew straight away. And with the fear, right, I looked around looking for my friends, and I saw something I never thought I'd see in my life, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing was, someone says, "Are they firing at us?"
Of course, yeah.
Someone else says, "Well, a minefield." So you're afraid to fucking stand. I know Ron and everyone else, you know, was injured on the ground. And poor lads had no chance to fucking run, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm there and I'm thinking, minefield.
Yeah.
If it's a minefield, don't move.
Oh my gosh.
if they're firing at us, this is what's going through my head now. I don't know about anybody else. I can only talk about myself. What happened?
Yeah.
Through my eyes, I might. Yeah. But.
So you stayed on the ground.
Well,
you were
didn't
in
know
fear,
whether
yeah.
to fucking stand.
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry for. I apologize for cursing. Sorry about that.
I understand.
No, I didn't know whether it was safer to move or to run.
Yeah.
And then one of the youth leaders grabbed me and just threw me over the wall. Just get out of here. And he didn't want me to say any more or nothing. This is the man that had grabbed me to say, "Here, help the lady over the wall."
Help Mary over the wall, yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And
go on, Joe, go on.
Now, when did you realise? But I suspect from what you've just said, you realised that this was catastrophic.
I seen Derek dead, lying there in the grass. I mean, I didn't need any more.
The poor child.
And his poor parents, you know. As for the parents of all the lads that are injured, but...
Yeah.
It was a horrible time for everybody. Yeah. But on that day, then... But that was basically the end. I walked back to... It was Bannon the Clay, Joe, we were saying.
Okay.
You mentioned and it was... Until then, I'm sure, Ron, it was a great old weekend, wasn't it?
It was, up to then, beans and toast, fish fingers.
We even had our Easter eggs with us.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
And our parents had given our Easter eggs, I think, to some of the leaders, how innocent we were. But people think of 12-year-olds of today.
Yeah.
a 12-year-old Joe, you know, in 1979 is a hell of a difference from their knowledge or you know.
And Ron, can you relate to what you can, I think, what Gary is saying there when the explosion happened, he's on the ground, he realised it was catastrophic from looking around him, but he didn't know whether they were being, you were being shelled or you'd walked into a minefield, and so he was scared to say...
It was like we had walked into a minefield.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only way to describe it. The explosion, the fire, the blackness of it. After that, when I was on the ground, I couldn't hear anybody talking. I couldn't hear anybody shouting. Yeah. All I could hear was my watch. I had my arms behind my head. I could hear my watch ticking. People were talking, but I couldn't hear them.
The silence,
you know, so obviously that was the shock or the noise from the implosion or the explosion. I know when the first responders came on, they took all of the haversacks to one side and searched through them just in case.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know whether there was anything else found or not, but they did take them to one side just to be sure. You know, and this is the whole point about this, Joe, is you can still walk through the Glen of Lamal to Lugan Quilla and no one is going to stop you.
There should be a press.
Apart from a sign.
Can I interject there, Joe, for a second?
I'm back then. Sorry, yep.
Ron, I don't know, that maybe it's a false memory, but the only thing I remember about that one sign, and you're correct, we only passed one sign, and it said, if the red flag is flying. And at the bottom of it, it said, no stray dogs. And we laugh our ass off because, of course, you know, I don't know any stray dogs that can read.
Okay.
I don't remember bit, but I know the sign is...
I have two dogs here and only one of them can read, and I'm trying.
Me and Gary. Ron, you...
No stray dogs. I mean, what that was the clearest thing on the whole sign as far as I could see.
Ron, how long were you in hospital for?
4 months.
And I'm very conscious when I say that. I mean, when you were actually permanently, because you've been back and forward ever since. And Gary, how long were you in hospital for?
Well, I wasn't physically injured, though.
Okay.
But
Was miraculous.
Yeah, but I mean, that's probably, you know, a curse in a way.
Why, Gary?
Because survivor's guilt, Joe, is one that...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, and I'll be quick, and I'm aware people are listening to me.
Yeah.
But survivor's guilt, when you blame yourself, I blame myself for something that happened that day. A particular incident, okay?
Yeah.
And that's why I was alive and my best mate was dead, right?
Yeah.
But I never got anyone telling me any difference. So this is what I found in my head all my life.
Counselling, therapy.
Right? So it was the 70s.
There was nothing at that time, Joe. There was no counselling, no nothing at that time. In fairness,
to an extent,
everybody that was there that day was made to feel that it was their fault because...
Exactly. Yeah,
what I'm saying is, you can't apply
just like
legal standards.
Yeah, okay,
sorry, Ron, and sorry, Gary, but you can't apply legal standards and hold 11 and 12 and 13-year-olds to the full force of the law. You're talking about small children, boys. 11, 12 and 13.
And you did nothing wrong.
I just want to ask one simple question, Gary.
That was a life-shaping thing that happened at that time. What I'm saying is, how can somebody 45 years later pick up something and bring it home with them?
It happened this week. That's your point.
The other side of the thing is, two young lads had it and they're thrown around the back garden and here we go again. That's all I'm saying. In fairness to the lads, and Gary, I fully understand the survivor's guilt and I really, really I think I'm very brave for saying it, Gary. And I really mean that.
I know, Philip, your reason for contacting us was one to remember and memorialise those wonderful three boys and the people who were injured, but also to say 45 years later, here we have someone picked up a live round this week. Now, thankfully, it's been found. Philip Bogle,
Can I say on my part, I always remember the four lads of Barry Vanesca, and there's three lads in the Glen of Amal, but it's from my Glen of Amal, it's four lads. Dave Appointon is buried beside the lads there, and he was there just 3 weeks before them. He was in the same youth club, and it was the same. All I'm
trying
to say is,
that you're talking about, that was killed by the car.
He would have been with us apart from that.
I'm always rooting, Gary. Always rooting for David. At this time of the year, it's always in my head.
I'm always thinking of
David and thinking of the lads. Okay. But, listen, always in my head, Gary.
Well, we all do.
It's always in my head. And I tell you, the unfairness of it. The unfairness of it and the lack of... can I just tell you, the night that David was knocked down, that was only 6 weeks before the Glen of Amal, but that night, I remember going home. We were going home after the guards, after everything. Yeah. And I remember a neighbour, a lovely, lovely woman, Mrs. Baz, and I remember she said to my mother, bring him in and give him a cup of sugary tea.
Yeah.
As that could do for the shock. But what I'm saying is, so that formed 100% of the counselling. And the only thing that would I'd have any grievance with is, don't apply legal standards and science legal paraphernalia to 11 and 12 year old boys. Yeah. Line up 11 and 12 year old boys today. Yeah. And look what you're looking at babies, for God's sake.
Of course.
Don't start applying legal standards to that. But what I'm saying is, there was nothing done for them. There was absolutely nothing done for the lads. There was nothing done for the family. And what I'm saying is, if it is so perfect according to the army, what do you do 45 years later? Pick it up, something, and walk.
Well, they say there's signage, there's warning. You know what? I've read it. There's warning
Good point.
Ron O'Neill, Philip Bogle and Gary Martin, I know you'll join with me because the anniversary was only 2 days ago, in remembering your pals, your comrades, your best friends, your schoolmates, your football mates, your gallivanting mates, Derek Finn, 13, Declan Kane, 13, and Victor Mills. Gary, Philip and Ron, look after yourselves. And God bless you all.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I'm Joe at rt.ie. Kate Tierney. Kate, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
When did you discover that your pub was going to be demolished?
On Monday afternoon.
And how did you discover?
We discovered because we were getting ready to go to the pub about 2 o'clock, and my partner Con was waiting on the settee for me to move along.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in, he says, wait till I read this to you.
Okay.
And he read me out the piece that the pub was going to be demolished for the new Cork Lewis.
Yeah, the Lewis is
coming,
yeah.
So he says to me, is this the 1st of April? And I looked at him and I said, I think we were both in shock. And then I said, will you read it out again? So then he read it out again. It was coming up the hill from Parky Creeve and going through the pub and up the hill, and we were going to be demolished. And I'm on my way. We were getting ready to rush down to get ready to open the door and do our jobs, you know.
Of course, and the pub. The pub is still there.
Exactly. And warning the customers as they came in, the same fellow who sent us that the article and the text sat on his usual seat, and I said to him, you want to be careful there. There could be a tram coming. But we were shocked, absolutely shocked.
And you'd heard absolutely nothing beforehand?
No. I didn't even know they were looking at the Cork Lewis, you know?
And what have you heard since?
Well, since... Besides, before we even got to the pub, we were getting messages and texts, and a customer actually said, I'm already on a heart monitor. Because, I mean, imagine your watering hole all of a sudden gone,
your pub,
or whenever.
The venue.
It's
well known, especially for outsiders, so to speak, going to Parky Creeve. It'll be one of your last watering holes, isn't it, before you get to the...
Yes, that's right. But between Cork Con, Páirc Uí Chaoimh and Páirc Uí Chaoimh, they're the three stadiums around us. So we'd be sort of one of the go-to. There's two pubs in the village, and we'd be the bigger one. So we'd be, they'd be queuing to get in the door, you know?
Now, Kate, so, have you been on the Lewis in Dublin?
Oh, God, yeah. I'm actually from Dublin originally.
Oh, yeah. Now, I know there's only two lines, but it is one of the best things that ever happened, Dublin, the Lewis.
It is. It's fantastic. And I'm originally Navan Road.
Oh, yeah.
And we never had the opportunity. We've buses. But there's a very good bus service for us. We're near the city.
The Navan Road's incredible bus service. But if you go down the Navan Road now to where you're from, if you go down to the 17 shops, Crapper. You know Noel Clark's Bakery and all that carry on. Well, about 50 yards beyond that, there's a Lewis station.
Yeah. Oh, no, I was never... See, that would have come after I left.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's coming for you again. It's caught up with you.
I know. We still are getting over the shock, you know. So, it's just... But TII contacted us that afternoon. We arrived to the pub.
Okay, yeah. They contacted. That was very good of them. After you were told, what did they say to you?
Well, they had... when we got to the pub, there was a large brochure and maps and everything on the floor. So then we said, oh, this is all official. And they phoned us then, not long after we got a call, they'd like to meet with us.
Okay.
And I said, God, isn't that nice? We thought that was nice, you know. But so they arranged to meet us 12 o'clock next day in the pub.
Nice.
And a team arrived and they explained. I said, look at the shock and horrors. They said, we couldn't give out any information before the launch. It's not policy to. But we're the only place going to be demolished. You know?
Are you? Okay.
Yeah. So it's 18 kilometres.
Yeah.
And of the 18 kilometres, there's three businesses affected. Two not severely so, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But ours very severely. We're gone.
There's 24 stops. And there's you're near the terminus at Mahon Point.
Number 19.
Your stop number 19, Ballinlock. Yeah, no, well. Ballintemple, Docklands, Marina, obviously Páirc Uí Chaoimh before that.
Yeah.
Over the river to the Ray with the Kent station, which is looking fantastic. They've done it up about times. And then into the city centre, into St. Patrick Street. Then out the river again to UCC. Then it takes a sharp left up the hill to the Cork University Hospital and then to the shopping centre in Bishopstown. And then it goes out to Clash Road to Ballincollig and does a circle and it comes back in. Now, excuse me, the TII, Transport Infrastructure, were you any calmer after meeting them, Kate?
Well, no, because what they said to us was it's the limbo we find ourselves in now. Because what they said was they're going to, there's a 2 month consultation and down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh the 29th we can go down and all the residents and have a look at what's planned and give our opinions or make a submission. And after that, they said they would come back to us very quickly to talk to us. So then what the limbo we find ourselves in, we're of an age.
Okay.
And I think there's a plan for a smaller pub, much smaller pub on the site after they've taken away a lot of it.
Okay.
And which would be great for the community because I think the community needs another little pub there, a pub for the locals and the community.
Well, what would you do?
Well, we're limbo because we're of an age. I'm 70 and Connor's 74.
Yeah.
And we can't have uncertainty going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to know what's happening with us, you know?
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
And make decisions for ourselves because we can't, at our age, wait years and then maybe start all over again. That's gone, that option, you know?
Yeah. And,
I don't know.
And did they say
it leaves us in limbo.
I know you met in the pub Okay.
Yes.
But did you go outside the pub with TII Ireland and say to them?
Oh, we show them around because the pub on the outside is deceptive. It's huge inside.
Okay.
And, so they said, as I say, we have to wait and see.
Now, but why? But did they say to you, listen, we have to take off the corner of the pub because the Lewis goes round the corner and we need a swing, especially if there's two lines. Did they explain to you why
No, it was obvious from the map. I could see that they were coming in my main door to the right and going across and around through the pub. So most of the large building is gone and the side.
It's a long building on the side.
It is.
But did you say to them, like, could you move it a bit?
If it's in that area, there's nowhere to go because I'm surrounded by houses.
Okay. And did they say to you, well, if we don't knock the pub down, we might have to knock the houses down?
No, that wasn't mentioned. I think they might have said the easier option was to knock the pub. But all the neighbours that are affected, like there's gardens all the way up and the parking has to be taken away on the road beside us and that's to be moved to behind the houses somehow. So it affects all the neighbours and I think they're all in shock too, you know, because it's out of the blue.
And I know it is a shock, but has anyone, I know it's early days yet, has anyone said this will be fantastic?
I think in general, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Because Cork needs public transport. Yeah. The bus service is not great. Yeah. I mean, my staff would ring me to get a bus and say, Kate, we're going to be late. The bus hasn't turned up. So it was a no-show. And then they're supposed to cross the city, but then they'd stop in the middle and dump the passengers out. So the passengers would then have to wait for another bus.
Down the city centre there. The venue bar, how many men will be made homeless if it's knocked down, as we used to say in Ballyfair?
Yes, a lot. Because, as you know, it's a community centre.
Yeah, of course it is.
And we have, you'd have a lot of widows, widowers, or whatever, and they come in there, and I see a lot of families meet up. Maybe separated families meet up with their children because we do food as well.
Oh, wonderful.
And, you know.
And how long is the pub of the family?
We're into 11 years.
Okay. And was there the family beforehand? Was Con there beforehand?
No. Okay. Con was not. No, we're new to the area and the venue. And we started off like from scratch. We renovated it.
Well done.
And we put a lot of money into it.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I was looking at the moment I was going to get a chunk of it plastered because the big old building, it's a lot of maintenance, which is ongoing, you know.
You don't want to get plastered. You don't want anyone getting plastered in the venue bar, do we? It's a very good,
shop.
It's a very, I know, very well-run shop. I've looked at it on Google Earth this morning. You have massive clock outside, which is beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Made by
Stokes, the legendary car company.
That's right.
And is the building in any way protected or listed, Kate?
Well, it's in what they saw, some sort of an architectural heritage area. And I think the building was, but that can be changed, obviously.
I know that. And do you see yourself running a smaller bar when the tram's going through it?
No, because don't know what timeline we're talking.
Yeah, and then the other
at that stage.
And then the other problem is, as you probably remember from the construction of the Lewis, they have to dig up every single road because they have to move.
Yeah.
There can be nothing under the Lewis, no pipes, no wires, no drains. They all have to be moved because the Lewis can't be dug up. So that's the big... And businesses, I know, in Dublin, businesses went bust because in the city centre and indeed out at the Red Cow, great businesses like the Tile Factory, they were completely marooned because of the construction.
Yeah.
Anyway, how's Con now? How's Kate and Con now? How are the two?
I suppose between we're getting a lot of phone calls from all the various newspapers state radio stations, and I think everybody, because the venue is just iconic, because of the GAA connection of every county, that every county is saying, "Oh my God, where do we go now?" You know. Because they'd say, you're the Tipperary pub, we always meet up in your pub, and the other counties would be similar. And then you've the same people coming every time. And I'd say it's a shock to the wider, you know, group of people, you know.
Now, either way, it'll be a few years.
It will. Yeah. But that might leave us in limbo if we want to retire.
That's true, yeah.
Because they can't exactly sell it now.
And Kate, you're from Dublin. Where's Con from?
Con is Cork, centre, middle parish, Cork City.
So it's a mixed marriage, Dublin and Cork.
It is. Yeah. Denny's originally Denny's in the Colquay.
Oh, of course. The famous Denny's.
Yeah, beautiful old pub.
Well, Kate, would you put a submission in to the Transport for Ireland and say we're listening and we listen, and they were with you the other day and they said they couldn't tell you beforehand. But will you put in a submission begging them not to take the pub down?
We will be putting in a submission, and I know all the neighbours are going to get together and look at the area to see if there's another option.
Yeah.
You know, because although the roads in Cork, if you know some of the roads are very narrow.
Yeah, but you know the other thing that happened? Kate, you know the other thing that happened in Dublin? The value of the houses along the line went up dramatically. The value of the property, the value of houses, I don't mean pubs per se, but the value of houses along the Lewis line.
Yeah.
And do you mind me asking you, Kate, do you live above the shop?
No, we don't. We don't live at the pub. We live across the water in Montanati. We look down on it.
Okay. You're the only, and you're the only one to do it, because it's a very popular and very welcoming bar, the venue bar.
As you
say, a very, very big bar with great food. Kate, will you stay well? You know, take your time. Yeah. You have a lot of people supporting you, but if push did come to shove and you were told, Kate, it's for the greater good. Could yourself and Con run away to Albufeira or something, or Tenerife?
We mightn't have a choice, Joe, because there's a CPO on the map.
Well, you could always run away back to the Navan Road, Kate.
I'm on my way up to visit Dad now. He's in St. Mary's. He's 94.
In the park. Brilliant
spot. For a few days. He's in only for a few days.
Okay, well, you mind yourself coming up then. You have a great you've a great attitude, and kind regards to Con, and above all, Kate, kind regards to all the regulars who must be in Cork University Hospital in the trauma unit.
They will. I'm not kidding you. There's wide eyes all around the pub. Thanks very much, Joe, for the
And
phone
as I
call.
Say it again, TII said just at the beginning of the process, and we are listening, as I said, we are listening. Okay, Kate, mind yourself and safe travelling, and kind regards to your dad in St. Mary's in the Phoenix Park in Dublin. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Again, I'm just reading all the headlines from RTE, from breakingnews.ie, the journal. It said that device in Glenavamal was a live army round. The army have been on to us now to say, no, it was never a live round. Okay, that was great to hear. It's a pity we didn't know about it sooner, but it wasn't a live round, and it's been absolutely and totally found, which is great. The Mead Chronicle, Gardaí trying to trace missing ordnance that may pose an explosive incendiary risk, which will be of significant danger. That's in the paper. They're not getting that in. They're not making up the information. But anyway, glad to hear it was never a danger. Pat Brennan. Pat, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You remember that awful day. It was 2 days ago, 1979. What was your involvement? You're a first responder, Pat.
I was with the National Ambulance Service when we got the call to go there.
Yeah.
And the reason I was ringing in was just to pay a tribute to them two gentlemen you had on there, Ron and the other man.
Gary Martin, yeah.
Thinking back on it, there were kids that were injured along with other kids. And we were dealing with what we would call a major incident, trying to manage all of the kids and manage the scene. And get them back out across the rivers, which posed a bit of a problem for us, and get them to the hospitals and arrange helicopters for as many as we could.
Wow. And did you, when you got the first call, Pat, Did you realise that this was a major incident?
No, I knew it was more serious because the people that took the call was dispatching ambulances from Bartonglass, and then I authorised ambulances from Atari and Naas to go.
So it was a major.
So we knew it. We knew it was. It was more serious. It was more serious than might have come across on the phone.
Yeah.
Or what the information we had, and when we got there, we knew it was more serious. And at that stage, then did I look for helicopters for to get people out of there, because the difficulty we had getting in was going to be even more difficult to getting out with people on stretchers and people that were badly injured.
And was it, how inaccessible was the area, Pat?
Put it this way, I hadn't been in the area before.
Okay.
We were given directions. We went, we seen people in the distance, and we stopped on the side of the road and tried to get in and go across to them. Whether we went across the right way or the wrong way, there was nobody to give us directions. And I know we went in, and where we had ambulances parked, we had to try and get people back out across the river, where we made a kind of a platform with the fire brigade with ladders to come across the river to get them out into the ambulances. But like, part of the problem would have been, where do you park in a case like that? And that would have been part of the thing. Where do you park? Where can you turn? How can you get back out there?
And when did you realise it was a major incident?
Oh, well, the bits of information I got before I got there, I knew it was more serious all the time. And when I got there, it was even hard to believe. It was so serious. So then the thing was to try and get helicopters to try and get people out.
And could you...
We had to wait for them.
Okay, and could you see the full extent that there was 32 people in the group?
You know, I'm not ever sure I realised there was 32.
Okay.
We had so many people to look after and try to arrange, prioritise the more seriously injured, see who we could hold for the helicopter to come. There was so much going on in such a, what I would have called a short space of time, even though the injured people would have thought, like, what the hell are they doing? This takes a long time. But we had so much to try and plan and work on to get people out of there. But it's getting back to the real story. Yeah. It's great to hear the voices of those two lads that were there and to get their perspective on it. And like, from the day that they went away in the helicopter or in an ambulance or whatever, we never seen them since. Yeah. We would have been told how they got on, but that's about all.
Okay.
And
you heard Gary and Ron saying, I was talking about pain, and they were six hours. I know Gary wasn't directly injured, but Ron saying he was carried, and I said, on the back of a tractor to get to the ambulance, and I said, were you in pain? He said, no, I was silent.
That was one thing that was noticed on the day. Their injuries was that bad that there was possibly no nerve endings for to detect pain. The injuries were horrific.
And they were only, Pat, as you said, they were only children.
They were only children, and we seen them. We seen them as children.
Yeah.
We didn't see them. And now to hear them today talking about their experiences, absolutely great.
Yeah. Stay with us, Pat. I'll bring in James McConnell. James, you remember that awful day, April the 14th, 79, Easter. What's your memory of it, James?
I was with five other colleagues in civil defence, and we were camping in Stranahealy Wood.
Okay.
And it's just beside, one of the kids had run down. We heard the boom, we thought it was the army. And one of the kids ran down to our tents to say their mates were in bits. And we thought they were joking. And so we went with him, and we met some other kids coming down quite distressed, one with an injured leg. So we knew there was something at that stage. one of our members, John, he took the injured lad away. He had his car there to make the phone call, the initial phone call to emergency services.
Right.
And when we got up there, it was pure devastation. Like, there was, we had two had already deceased, and we had 11 injured. And so we just went around doing first aid till the first help arrived, probably waiting about 45, 50 minutes.
Did you? Because you would have been the first people to, one of your members in civil defence, to get to a phone.
Yeah.
To dial 999.
That's where the initial call was made. John made that call from Fenton's pub. And
were you able, James, were you even in, given, as Pat said, of such an isolated spot, were you able to give a location? How did you manage to give a location?
We could only give a rough location. We knew the area quite well from training. If you got to Nicky and Ford, it's the Ford, the crossing of the river, and just the head in the direction. John was able to give a rough direction. And I remember I was one of the ones that we and help did arrive. Like, we used a tractor, like, to get kids across the ambulance, like, you know. But it was a long, it was 45, 50 minutes that kind of felt like maybe a full day there with the kids and just trying to keep them alive to help arrive, you know. And that's the force I've heard from today. That's the force I've heard from the kids today.
And when you heard that initially, what age were you then, James? 20?
I was 20.
Yeah, okay.
I was 20 for short, my 24.
And you're in the civil defence, so you did good experience. But when you heard the initial explosion, did you think it was a small explosion? You know what I mean? Was it significant?
No, we heard the boom. You see, there'd been an announcement on the radio early that some explosives had been found on the radio, and we thought the army were just detonating something up at the firing range.
A controlled explosion.
That's what we thought, a controlled explosion. And it was only when Dermot ran down to our, came to our tent, but even that, we thought it was some kid messing, the initial stage, till we saw the injured kid. And we met the other kids, very distressed, begging us not to go up to where their friends were, you know. But it was...
They were begging you to... They were warning you that it was
not to go up. Yeah. Because they didn't know at that stage what happened, some of them, you know.
And how long were you in the location for?
It was about 45, 50 minutes before. I think it was a member of the Gardaí arrived, and then a local doctor had arrived. And then the HSE started, remember the HSE started to arrive. So we stayed there assisting, giving medical care as best we could with the medical staff. And then we assisted them with the rescue of the injured to get them across the river and after that. And then we just disappeared into the evening then, really, you know.
And then we, as we heard, did you have any post-traumatic counselling, James, in the civil defence?
No, it wasn't there in those days. Yeah, like, in civil defence at the moment, we have it there, like, you know.
Yeah,
but in those days, you didn't have it. You were relying on other people to talk to us. And definitely, it affected... Out of the six members, two members left civil defence after it, never came back, you know.
Oh, God rest the three boys, Derek, Victor, and Dick.
I still think of the young lad that we didn't save, you know.
Yeah.
Who died later on in the hospital. That's still
a
memory, you know.
Well, James, thank you so much, and thank you for what you did on that day, and Pat Brennan, what you did on that day, and first responders, and indeed people like the civil defence who are volunteers, but professionals as well as being volunteers. Thanks indeed, and God rest the three boys, as their anniversary has just passed 2 days ago, Victor, Derek and Declan. That's all for today's programme. Niall McMonagall is the sound broadcast coordinator, Shane Galvin, researcher, Richie Byrne, producer Annette Egan. Tomorrow we have a GAA special. We want to hear from you about some of the players that you remember but aren't necessarily household names. They may have played for your county and never got the chance to lift a cup. Damien Lawler will be in studio to take your calls with me and share his own name. So you can text 51551 or indeed email. It's probably best at this stage, joe@rt.ie. And then Good Friday, we're on. We will be, given the weekend that's in it in terms of enjoyment and chocolate and sweeties and the end of Lent. Did you grow up loving the 2 and 2? Remember the 2 and 2 bar from Orny's, or the Orny's version of Smarties, which they called Beano's? Did you go into morning when Cadbury's and Coolock stopped making the timeout bar, and it's now being made in Poland of all places? And as we know, there's no nicer chocolate than Cadbury's milk chocolate in Coolock, and great employer over nearly 100 years. And maybe you were one of the many people employed, I know a lot of them, from Ballyfermot around Roundtrees and in the Roundtrees factory in Inchicore. We want to hear from you again. 51551, email joe@rt.ie or 087 484 8888. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.